It's hard to sell something when nothing is any better than anything else. You know, you go to a conference or a psychic or a unicorn, and you're there not just out of idle curiosity. Usually you're there because it's really important to you that something change or feel different or better somehow. Or you're interested in your future or making the right decision about your future. So we're already coming from a let's call it constipated mind, right? Which is whatever is present is clearly insufficient for my taste. Does time-space turn out to be incarcerating rather than illusory? And we surge right into the next moment, usually from the point of view of quite a litany of insufficiency. And we're a sitting duck for everything and anything the so-called mind wants to throw at us when it comes to frustration, loneliness, regret, insufficiency, rigidity of a thousand kinds, right? And how we think we're processing our next moment.
I eat it all the time, actually.
Can I have a side of that?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. It's
all right. I'll put it in now. It'll be ready.
And we become comfortable with more of same, which is the inexhaustible presumption of optimizing our experience, usually in the future. And that reflection or point of view is on a clearly automatic pilot. You don't have to lift a finger or decide on anything or avoid anything to be yourself in a stream of consciousness which suggests individuation and the constant thirst for novelty. Consciousness, were there any, is expressive, playful, bursting, being alive is, right, non-inertial. You're not frozen, you're dynamic. You're so profoundly dynamic that you're actually refreshed in each so-called moment in a field of total, total novelty. You've never been here before, and here is not place, and here is not time, and you will never be here again. And that's nonstop. Now, the mind, what we call the mind or referential assignment, can't process that your actual experience is without space and without time. Mind cannot process that this is off the charts. What this actually is doesn't need to process itself, and that might also occur to you in your experience. You don't need to process this. which would also suggest you don't need to extract anything from it, nor do you suffer from boredom or regret or anticipation or insufficiency of any kind. But for that to start to appear in your experience, there has to be a, call it a natural interest to withdraw from the surging of mind and universe creation. If you don't find yourself capable or interested or taking some, call it organic steps to withdraw from hysterical projection, then you remain, one remains in, right, as the consequence of hysterical projection. which can be quite lovely. I mean, you can go to a, you know, a concert or the beach or have a fight with your spouse or your parent, and living as the product of some kind of abstraction or some kind of hysteria is loaded with everything we love. Mystery and despair, meeting strange people, pushing down our, let's say, our libidinal impulses so that we don't behave irrationally toward our committed relationships. We're always on the lookout for self-imposed measure of one kind or another, because we think it's useful to us to maintain, you know, full steam ahead. And we don't see that this profundity of projection and assessment is fantasy. It's not actual. It's dreamed. Which is great. Everyone's dreaming. There's no need to set yourself apart from. If there's nothing to sell because there's nothing right or wrong with whatever is occurring in your experience, then you have to figure out really what your interest might be to reconsider the miracle of your own present experience. No one can inspire you out of yourself. Certainly no one can dictate or shame you out of yourself, not successfully. All of these impositions that the society, the parents, the educators, the ministers, right, the unicorns impose on you are, you could say, violations of your autonomy. But you're not really violated because you never actually became anything. You're only something illusorily. So the imposition of various philosophies or fascisms that try to guide and control your behavior can only afflict you in an illusory manner. But most lovely people are completely signed on and signed up for their own relevance, their own sorrow, their own appetite for elation, their own appetite for security. And we do this habitually even after some number of decades of life, where we see that everything and anything we've been interested in doesn't last, doesn't work, doesn't satisfy us any longer, but we don't stop. In the 12-step community, there is a very pithy saying about the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, getting the same result over and over again, but expecting a different result the next time you do it. That's kind of the sloppy version, but that's the idea. And that usually applies to someone that's using substances or perhaps harmful behaviors from an addictive point of view. So that we repeat, trying to make some kind of progress psychiatrically or emotionally, but by indulging in the repetitive behavior and getting the same exact outcome, we're insane to continue to do that. That's supposed to be a pep talk for an addict to stop using. And so maybe we put down the substance because our higher power gives us, you know, the capacity to do so, or the fellowship gives us a sufficient maturity and sufficient support that we now find ourselves psychically or emotionally getting some nourishment from the fellowship, from the program, from the steps, from being of service. And then we're able to miraculously put down the substance for a time, maybe for the rest of your life. But as a creature suffering from imaginary insufficiency because you think you're in space-time, that doesn't quit. Pride and position and relevance for the likes of me will not leave me alone. And we're not even so sure that we want those companions to leave us alone.
Those are my only friends.
Yeah, there you go. Those are my only friends. What's a guy to do?
I think it's the desperation that keeps you going back over and over again to the same thing that doesn't work. If that's all you know, and you're that desperate, it's kind of like you don't have any choice.
Vegetarian sausage. Do you want to try some? Little piece? It's okay.
Lisa, are you going to eat that English muffin? You're going to pass it in?
This one, okay.
That's the one we want.
Thank you.
She was saying that they make no spread chickpeas and
not vegetarian as much as kind of save the world.
Stay nimble.
So what's the primary problem in saving the world? We'll tell you a lot about
the primary problem is what Jeff is pointing to, and that's that knee-jerk reaction out of desperation to grab on to anything, something that you think is going to save you, and you keep going back to that, and you're holding on to it so tightly because you think that's the only thing that's going to save you. And the root of it is that stiffness and inflexibility is what's taking you down, and you can't see it. You can't let go of it. Because of the desperation underneath it.
So you feel that in that community. It's really an intense.
It's my judgment.
Yeah.
My judgment.
Well, you're tuned to it, like a radio station.
Because I'm about as inflexible as I can in a lot of ways.
There you go.
Well, I think we'll help you pack.
And interestingly enough, I'm on the other end of the spectrum at a conference with people that some have a great deal of urgency, and others like myself, I'm here to connect. I'm here to relate.
Yeah.
Now I have a bigger language. language and connecting with people that think very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that rigidity. I mean, I have that too, because I confessed to one of them and said, yes, we can be arrogant, you know, as a more liberal view of environmental issues. And so, absolutely. Of course I'm right. You see?
What is your
name, sir? Oh, it's a Citizen Climate Lobby. It's a hilarious joke to Francine. Ask her. Citizen Climate Lobby.
Sorry.
A fee on carbon, possible carbon.
It's like that train in the Polar Express.
Directly with a monthly check.
Sliding on the ice.
You had help when you get it back.
Oh, boy, look at that.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I see it. It's the desperation of holy shit. I believe this. There's a problem.
I love those. Consequences.
You grab at anything you can. And a lot of times, if you're that vulnerable individual, you're going to get really inflexible and grab at whatever the hell you think is going to save you.
It's, well, this is actually non-symptomatic and non-causal. So even a adroit insight into the nature of human behavior is, right, it's an artifact of the confusion of human behavior. It's imagined. Yeah. And since it's imagined, and it's not imagined from any source, it's absolutely random. The way that we identify with self and story and relevance is, you could say, remarkably random.
Yet, like, remarkably on point. Like, this doesn't fuck up. It really is very...
Yeah.
Specific in a way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is an example. I mean, well, you know what I mean? You're not like flailing, like you're eating food and everything is, you know what I mean? Like pretty, your heart's beating, your blood, like it's taken care of. You
think,
know?
Think of the identity that you conjure, which of course is lovely, of a person at a conference wearing a climate change button, wanting to relate and be part of your life in the company of other people. And then you have, like we all have, you could say emotional responses or frames or contexts for where we were, why we were there, the experience that we had, how we related to people. And then the takeaway from that, you could say, lends itself to your or anyone's identity. This is me, I'm Jeff, I did this, then I did that, I felt this way, I wore a pin, I had an experience, I'm interested in climate change, but in a cooperative way. And so we inhabit this identity with perfect sincerity, perfect joy, perfect relevance, and it's an absolute fantasy. But we live in the momentum of this fantasy of who we think we are, where we're going, why we're going there, what we experienced, whether we played it well or didn't play it well. If we are suffering from despair, we have all kinds of reasons as to why we are suffering from despair and what we should all do about it. And everything is appearing impersonally, spontaneously, in a plasma, on point.
Well, and the funny thing is, the idea that you think you know why everybody's suffering is just the same as the environmentalist thing. It's just kind of hard to see in that, like, circular, just keep whipping up new. You're like, well, I'm not an environmentalist, but let me tell you why everybody's miserable. You know, because
yeah,
they're all environmentalists, so you just keep whipping up all these weird...
You go see Wayne Dyer, you pay good money, and you get a position paper. You go see Carolyn Meese, you get a position paper. You go see the Dalai Lama, you get a position paper.
Wayne's got some free videos on there.
Well, free or paid, huh? Free. A position paper, for instance, is what happened to you when you went to see two psychics. it's a position paper. It's a white paper on what you think happened to you prior to this moment. Well, those are all lovely. Frantic is a great word. Chaos is a great word. Control is a great word. Buy-in is a great word. I mean, it's lovely, but no. You see what I mean? You can't pin this down on some kind of causal relationship to actually have a position. If Deepak Chopra talks to you and you spend good money, or Adyashanti talks to you, or Eckhart Tolle talks to you, or now, thank God, who's the comedian, the Eckhart Tolle spokesmodel? Jim Carrey. Or if Jim Carrey talks to you about what spirituality is, what you're getting is a position paper, which is a form of, let's say, cogent, entertaining, highly organized chaos.
Well, this is the weirdest example, but something about this is sticking with me. I'm sorry. Director expressive. If I look at this with one eye closed, it's over here. But if I look at it that way, it moves drastically.
Yeah.
But either way, if I put my finger where I think it is, it's there. It gets it right.
Oh.
But my eyes see it completely shifted to the left or right, like huge amounts. But it gets it right. Somehow it knows specifically where it is, but my experience of it is all over the fucking place. It's like, you can make up all kinds of things about how that happens, but
yes,
that's pretty wild.
It's totally wild.
Kind of ridiculous, but
ridiculous and wild is what we got. So your persona, and they're all quite lovely, except for some people's. Not yours. I mean, people you were mentioning earlier, right? Yeah. The persona, which is quite lovely, is on tap. You don't need to do any kind of review or premeditation to express yourself through the beautiful pattern of you. Through your persona and your interests and your interest in cooperating or receiving attention from others or making a connection, either a political one or a social one or any kind. You're absolutely on tap. No effort. It's the interest that gets you. You're interested in yourself.
It gets you to
the
concert
in your life,
too, right?
Say again?
You're interested in a particular kind of music, you go to that concert.
Yes.
So it's the interest that gets you to that venue.
So-called,
yeah.
Right.
Or you like a couple of folks, and they like something, and you're intrigued, and you check it out. Because you like that.
Yeah. Yep.
But you're saying it's the interest in what is occurring, not the interest in like getting used to liking something like a preference, but more like the invested interest in what's actually happening being somehow some other way or
I don't know.
Thinking you know what's going on.
I don't know. What when you look at the call it the geometry of consciousness effervescing the way that it does, and of the identification and interest and relevance that we seem to either enjoy or suffer from, it's kind of hard to take away anything all that definitive.
Yeah.
Like, you're right, you like a certain kind of music, and you make an appointment and purchase a ticket and get in your dinosaur fart time machine and go to the location where that celebrity is, picking up a Gibson SG and wailing the fuck out of some old chords, right? You're like, whoa, that came true, rock and roll. You see, we're compulsively framing ourselves within what we call space-time for, what would you call it, individuated relevancy.
Yeah, the idea of having interest or not from a persona is,
The individuated creative parts a bit of a downer, I would say.
It comes with, doesn't it?
That piece can be a downer.
Unless you think you're winning. And then maybe you ride that for a while.
To me, and wherever I happen to be, it's an intersocial thing. You know? I and they, and either I'm shut down or I'm open. When I'm shut down, it sucks.
But it's like, however you're labeling that is...
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. That investment in I is probably at the root of the irritation. You know, I am happy, I am unhappy, and I'll tell you why.
Well, here's why it's not. Nothing is at the root of the irritation. Can I get a little more decaf at your leisure?
I have a check.
Thank you. Because all you can really do, which is nothing at all, is dream right now. So we conjure an I, we conjure irritation, we conjure the expectation of cause and symptom, then we name the various elements of cause and symptom, and now we feel like the Buddha felt, we know why there is suffering. We don't. We just don't. He didn't know.
We're desperate to think that we understand it so we can fuck with it.
Maybe. I don't know. But if it's spontaneously and impersonally arising, then it really does not have an agenda.
I'm not saying you can, but we really want to explain it and understand it so we can get in there and fix it. So we aren't just a little suffering bug.
Maybe.
So we have some control.
Maybe. See, maybe. So that we're not, or so that we don't, or so that we do, we don't really know. You see, because we're anthropomorphizing this mystery with such confidence and such immediacy that we're understandably full of explanations.
Well, and then you're
but none of them are true.
You're inhabiting a persona that has...
they're just not.
Some kind of serious free will to do something. So anytime you're saying any of those things, you're saying that now you're a... person that could either be interested or not interested, or
But so it goes back to some kind of identification that just happens.
Yes.
It's not like we make it happen or not make it happen. It's like, I'm building on this self.
We're doing our, you could say, best to consider the presently effervescing nature of experience. And by doing so, it's not that difficult to dismantle all of the vectors of confidence and certainty and relevance that we have that dictates why this is the way that it is. We don't know. Freud didn't know. Jung didn't know. Everyone's just a position paper, right? What Freud contributed to potty training was a position paper. What Jung contributed to, you know, archetypal insight and various very thorough forms of successful therapy was a position paper. Hitler had a position paper. Idi Amin. Putin. Obama. The people that fly the Confederate flag and the people that take it down. Everyone's just running on, you know, you could say impulsive position papers that have no true reality and flare off and disappear nonstop without any lasting duration or even any findable cause or consequence for this just dreaming. To have a cause or a consequence, you have to do this. Everybody stop. Now I'll figure it out. Right? To have an opinion that really nails this down, either from a behavioral point of view or a unicorn point of view or any point of view, you have to say, everyone stop. Now I got this. But guess what? No one hears you. It doesn't obey. It just keeps effervescing, yes? Completely spontaneously, completely impersonally, apparently patterned. I can draw conclusions about myself on tap with absolute confidence. No delay. But they're untrue. They're not binding.
So untrue is synonymous with doesn't last.
One way to look at it.
Do you think our emotional reactions to things are what would get us in trouble? We're playing a big part of it, for example.
No. No, they don't. They can't. Because nothing ever happened to you prior to this moment.
Well, that's the point.
No, don't go hypothetical. Just hang right here. Don't go hypothetical because then you're toast. You have to figure out what this is like right about now. Stop there. No. No, you're not actually anywhere. You can report on it that way. But you're never anywhere. Even in the midst of either lovely or really unreasonable emotivity. You're not anywhere. You can start anywhere. But start, I mean, does this have a beginning? Why start anywhere? This never commenced. I mean, the physicists would like to tell you, before the Big Bang, there was nothing. Which is a lie, because they don't know. And Terence McKenna very humorously said, just give us one major big fucking lie and we'll take it from there. You see, this has no commencement. So you can't actually start from anywhere except imaginarily, which is fine. Yeah, well, mushrooms. More so than DMT. He was a philosopher. He was an artist. He was a change agent, right, for consciousness.
Part
That's
elf.
Really what he was. Part dolphin,
elf.
Part elf, part unicorn. Yeah. You see, you can't start anywhere because this never began. So where are you going to start? You see, the moment you entangle with this from the vantage point of ideation, reporting, cause, effect, consequence, improvement, place, time of day, you're dreaming. It's not true. It's an abstract overlay on the fact of your actually liquidating completely off the charts WTF. Now, whether you might be interested, one might be interested in following those breadcrumbs to wherever they may lead you, I mean, that's your business. Because nobody can talk you into or out of anything, right? Your first-hand experience and the way that you experience your first-hand experience runs the show. There's truly no utility to this. There's nothing to sell. You're not going to end up in a better place. You're not going to end up in a worse place. That there is here is irrefutable, but if you think you're in a place or in a time of day, that's an abstraction. You know that you're here. No one's going to talk you out of that. But where is here? You have no clue. When is here? No idea. How you got here? You have no clue. Hereness will fuck you up. It will cut the ropes that you think attaches you to this, to the lunar module or the spacecraft. I mean, we carve the revolution of the Earth around the Sun into units. The units are seconds and minutes and hours and days and months and years and decades and centuries and millennium. We don't really go into 10,000 year increments much, right?
Yeah, because it's very like small. Yeah. 1 hour is good.
Yeah.
24 is about.
So you ask someone, well, what time is it? So do they say? Did they say 11, 12, 32? Nobody tells you the time in seconds. And most likely they round the minutes. Well, yeah, if you've got some Asperger friends, you're going to get a lot of accuracy.
Yeah.
So if you say I'm late, are you late to the second, to the minute, to the hour? Maybe you're late a day if you're traveling by burrow to a friend's wedding high in the mountains. You might be late by days, right? You could be late by weeks, months. You could be really, really late to the whatever party you think you're going to. But you can see how all of that fine-tuning gradation of a unit that defines the so-called time it takes for the Earth, whatever it is, to revolve, whatever that is, around the Sun, whatever that is broken down into an abstraction. But actual experiencing, I use that word in quotes, is not influenced by time. You can say I'm in the basement of the Hattery, where you may have been many times before, but that's an abstraction, because this isn't a place. You know that you're here, but if I ask you how you got here, that you have to imagine. You see the difference? Presence is irrefutable without space, without time, without cause, without consequence, absolutely dripping with sufficiency, and can also be seen in a panicked manner as unyielding insufficiency. Now, where we typically dwell is in the fantasy of space, time, and self. Which is like, it's like, roll the presses. You remember all those scenes in all those movies where the newspapers are running like at rapid speed under the rollers and the ink? That's the mind. That's where we live. In the print house at very high speed. And the news just keeps coming. I mean,
we don't really take any time to evaluate the news. We just take it in.
Yeah. I mean, by the time you've read the headline, that news, long gone. And yet, you see how lovely and easy it is for us to socialize through the vantage point of shit happened to me, and it was cool, or it wasn't cool, and now I have a button, and I want to go do it again, and I saw two psychics, not one, they told me this guy would be okay, but maybe not that. I mean, and this is lovely. I mean, we're effusing as a brilliant crystalline waterfall of self, of storytelling. I mean, we're fantastic. You can't have more fun than this. But you know, from your own experience, there appear to be consequences by living in abstraction. The Buddha called it suffering. So what do we want? Well, I'll tell you what I want. I want to effuse joyfully from now until I so-called die, no suffering. That's what I want. Isn't that what everybody wants? Why do you go see the unicorns?
Yeah,
I want to effuse just the way I am, but the suffering, that's fucking got to go.
I feel good all the time.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
If it were possible, I don't think I'd be sitting here.
You'd be happy. Someplace else. One comes with bread.
Yeah, stick more of that. It was probably like an onion.
I'm good.
It was a piece of an onion. No big deal.
Yeah. If there's a difference as to why I love to denigrate everything else, even though I'm not allowed to do that anymore.
You got to practice for July.
I got to practice.
You really got to practice.
Man, really got breaking a sweat. I'm breaking a sweat here.
You haven't denigrated a thing, really, today. You're doing good.
I know, I'm working it.
I'm disappointed.
I know, me too. You have no idea how
hard this is for me.
The way that you live is not a way, and there's no you, and there's no living. It's just not. But the way that you live and what you, let's say, aspire to, what you want to discover, right? Because you're a, even though we might insist that we're not open or under the influence of some kind of afflictive emotion, you can't screw with open. Right? You cannot really interfere with open. No matter how crappy you may be feeling, how revengeful you may be feeling, how disappointed that you've been, poor friend is suffering from? Upward mobility.
Yes.
There's no upward mobility from here. You could be suffering in a thousand ways, but still open is not afflicted. So the craft then is to play around with what open looks like, feels like. You already have all of the intelligence you need, all of the enlightenment you need to feel what open is. You don't need to go to no mountain, no guru, no drug, no nothing. You are more than replete. But confusion, which is the effusive nature of association, makes it look like you're living in an individuated manner under the influences of space-time. And, of course, we're all welcome to that hallucination in bucketfuls for the long haul. If it turns out that you have some curiosity about what reality might be other than the way that you have typically enjoyed it or suffered it, fuck you. Good luck. No one can tell you what this is. Nobody can create the citadel or rules of engagement or behavior for how you are going to rush into open.
You aren't going to. Open is just fit.
I was going to say, rushing kind of is ironically not necessarily.
It's for you that thinks we're going to rush into.
There's urgency in there. How open is that?
The solution comes before the problem.
Well, you rush in the sense of it's just ever changing, constantly morphing. You're rushing every second. It's just like whoosh.
A rush.
Yeah. Not necessarily.
I could do that.
It's just whizzing.
Yeah.
we're so fond of requiring a reference point, as in self, to assess everything else, including how self is doing.
It's like a habit, just like you just said, rush, and right away you want to be like you think of it as a person rushing,
yep.
Because that's how you're like habituated to listening and and interpreting.
What's the self reference?
It's constant, yep. Like yep. A constant weird.
as opposed to the rush.
Maybe we could sing this song a bit.
That's a very strong self right there. Don't let me be misunderstood. How driven have I been, this I, by that?
Since you know you're going to be misunderstood anyway, you might as well just sing this song
right.
And dance.
Yeah.
Enjoy your story.
That actually would be a cool song.
This is the animals, right?
Yeah, it is. Have a friend
play
really well and
sing. Yeah, that
or I could do it.
That could be a fun.
I don't do either one of those things well, but
I got plenty in them.
If it turns out that consciousness is unpleasant for you, you're going to have to cope with that. And
can I bring it here to be fixed?
See, that's the interesting thing, right? It's a motivating force, right? It's a lovely motivating force that shit's not going my way, and I would like to discover a new position paper to assist me in things going my way more often, perhaps last longer, and be more secure than I've been up to this point.
To set down that negotiation is no small, seemingly no small skill. It can feel like more like losing.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't do any. It doesn't change.
This is why the New Age has billions of dollars passing hands day in and day out, psychic fairs and, you know, you name it. Because we're willing to pay for the next exaltation to mitigate our experience of insufficiency. The reason the New Age fails, arguably in its entirety, not intending to denigrate anybody, is because our sorrow is manufactured. So no remedy can work. Not a one.
It's always more worth an assembly line of manufacturing on tap 24 hours. You fix one, it's like, I got a new one.
If you had any sense, you'd be on the phone with your therapist all day long.
Yeah, you'll be on the phone all day.
Completely burned out.
As soon as the unicorn empowerment wears off, you have to have an access bars appointment. Or a pituitary realignment appointment.
Yeah.
Or ice cream with with salt. Yeah, no.
We're, peanut gallery down there.
We are working. We're working this out.
Oh yeah, when are we having an ice cream social?
That's a good one.
Strawberry.
There you go. 2 doors down.
Yeah. You see, even if you get lofty, and lofty's fun. I mean, you know. Getting high, shakti, you know, da 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 da, you know, strong energy, kundalini. I mean, that shit rocks. But you can also see that the people that frequent teachers that broadcast palpable shakti end up with that. It's another position paper. Yeah. So there's a, let's say there's a habit that you can observe, not do anything about, but you can observe it. What's the habit? The habit is that here's this. And where do you go for entertainment? Here. That's how you frame yourself. That's how you live. You're living abstractly because your attention or your the source for entertainment is frontal brain, is thought factory. You can observe this habit. By observing it, you don't have to pull the trigger. You're already liquid enlightened, whatever that might suggest for poetic fun. That follows a reflex of pulling the trigger on going to thought for entertainment, for relevance, for belief. Structure, coordinates. But what if you don't? Now you can't effort this. You're already completely without affliction or time or space with no reference at all. You're already that. Now, you may not have a strong either verbal or textural or behavioral vocabulary with it. That's understandable. We've all been trained in the world of mind. We've not gotten any legitimate training in the world of not mind. Though we've been conceived, born, and raised in not mind, always. So how about be you? That's easy. Don't go to mind for entertainment.
Would that be an effort?
No. It's not an effort. Going to mind is actually effortful. Thank you.
So then open then would relieve us of that going to mind.
It's not. There's no consequence, and there's no time delay.
Right.
So you can't. Yeah, you can't frame it that way, quite that way. Yeah, because it places us once again in the driver's seat. Yeah. Which of course is the lovely, right, flowering of mind.
Yeah, the listener takes it.
Isn't whatever it is that's occurring doing so without any intervention on your part, including yourself? Subjective consciousness is also occurring without any intervention on your part. Right? It's effervescing. And effervescing is accompanied by thought, by mind, by sensation, by the imaginary constructs of time, space, and self and body. So the great pumpkin goes, "Oh, I'm this guy." Go back to the pumpkin. Be the great pumpkin without particularity, without a sheath.
I would make a fun hat. One of those pumpkin things, you know? The old vine connector.
Movie.
I don't know what it is. It's distracting me from my son.
Lots of memories for me.
Huh.
Bob Berger, who used to own a Piperstill Inn.
I used to work there, yeah. I hated it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Well, he did interviews here for the local radio station.
Oh.
I was one of the interviews.
What was your subject matter?
Well, surprisingly, it's my church.
Oh, very good. What church do you belong to?
Baptist Press.
Okay. Yeah. This is a church, too.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. Thanks for working.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of memories upstairs.
Yeah, they did a nice job.
They did.
Very nice job. Yeah. You too. Happy Sunday.
This is the Church of the Open Hand.
Great pumpkin.
Yeah. That too.
I dare say she didn't believe you.
She might not have.
I don't think so.
I'm with her.
It could look like a church.
Church.
Doylestown Press.
You don't have to say Presbyterian when you know that you're like a big name in town.
Doylestown Press. I thought it was a gym.
They worship big ass muscles.
That's right. The spiritual muscle you got there.
Yeah, she kind of looks like that, so I could see where you got here.
The reflex for wanting experience to be about something, namely you, and that it should appeal to you, right? Experiencing should appeal to you. When you look at a picture of Ramana Maharshi, it's like experience really appeals to that guy. Right? That's a certain kind of message you're getting. Like, I'm the luckiest mofo on the planet because reality's my bitch. You see, and we can't help but to have that kind of expectation of experiencing, wanting it to be something to include us and, of course, go our way. That's right. We don't grapple with, or dare I say, enjoy the presence of absolute bafflement. Brian Wilson got close. You see what it did to him? Under the covers. I wish I had something positive to say about all this. Peter Brown does, right? He'll say positive shit about this.
Things will get more efficient.
Efficiency, joy, always a good cup of coffee. You know?
Well, you talk to him just about his experience of everyday life. Like, he just loves his car. Any restaurant, oh my God, like, the food's just great. Movies that he sees, like, his experience is pretty nice as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a pretty positive guy.
Absolutely enviable.
Yeah, just hit him on good days.
Yeah, well, he knows you, so he wants to make sure that you get the right message.
He's definitely not one of those guys aiming for your forehead with the stamp. Here, let me just put this on there.
I'm not suggesting you should give up anything or change your behavior in any manner whatsoever, or that it's going to turn out better for you if XYZ happens.
Care if it turns out better for you. Why the hell would you care if it turns out better for you?
I care.
Define better.
Yeah, what's the reference? Where's the reference standard there?
Well, that's interesting. When you look in your own experience, you can assign better, right?
Because for something to be better, you have to have a reference point.
Yep.
Or worse, you have to have a reference point.
Yep. Yeah. And this suggestion of, I don't know, the word freedom is too loaded.
Okay.
Let's just call it exquisite neutrality beyond measure.
Sure, man.
That's easier. It's not as loaded because it's no one knows what it suggests. It's fun to see, you know, how we're experiencing ourselves, what the texture and the nuance and the rhythm of it is, and whether there's sufficiency or insufficiency or hints of becoming or justification or appointments I need to make in the future. This is an intoxication. If it turns out that this intoxication is unsatisfactory somehow, well, then that might motivate you to rethink, reconsider the nature of your intoxication.